Happy Monday, everybody. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve Hallstrom, who is taking still a well-deserved week of vacation with his family, of course, over this holiday time. And it's been such a busy weekend, I know, for all of us. And many of us are, if you're not at work already, or if you're preparing or on the way to work, you are probably feeling as I'm feeling, and that's just a little weary. But it was a great weekend, and I hope you had a great weekend celebrating, really, the I don't know if I've ever seen a birthday party, so to speak, as extravagant as what we saw last weekend over the 4th with celebrating 250 years of this great country. And so I know many, of course, are weary today in body, but, coming off of a good birthday party, people are feeling grateful. At least I am feeling super grateful to live in this country. And as we celebrated it last weekend, I hope we all just took some time to reflect and remember and live with gratitude for the country that God has allowed us to live in. And so welcome to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Excited for today. I have a couple of topics I would love to have a conversation with you, listener, about, and want to look forward as far as what's coming next in our in these next couple of months. Of course, we're in an election year, and coming up this year, we do have a couple of ballot measures. And we're going to discuss those ballot measures and want to get some of your feedback and thoughts on those. One of the ballot measures, of course, is dealing with free school lunches, and we can talk about that. Also want to discuss with Representative Jared Hendricks, who's going to be joining us here in about 15 minutes. The North Dakota Supreme Court struck down a challenge from the state legislature regarding term limits. And so we'd love you to get your thoughts as the listeners on where you're at on this. You know, the state legislature tried to adjust a little bit of that constitutional measure that was voted in by you, the people, and where we're basically saying to our state representatives and to our elected officials in the state, with some offices, not all offices, but some offices, that they can serve eight consecutive years in the House, 8 consecutive years in the Senate, and then, of course, the governor's term limited as well. And so the legislature tried to address and maybe change a little bit of the language of this and wanted to extend those. And I'm a little, I guess, ambivalent on this. We're going to discuss it a little bit with Representative Hendricks when he's on. He was one of the proponents and, I guess, big backers of that constitutional measure that passed. And so I want to hear your thoughts. Give us a call or shoot us a text here at 701-271-1100 as we prepare for that discussion. And but really, in the 10 o'clock hour, I want to have a conversation with again, you, the listeners, on what is upcoming in regards to artificial intelligence and data centers. I don't know if I'm sure I have seen a public debate as hot or as polarized as data centers, but I think so many of us are really unsure of what to think or believe in terms of the, is it propaganda about the dangers of data centers? And is it, we know that artificial intelligence is here to stay. But I want to highlight a couple of things that I've seen on it, and then also want to have that conversation with you in the 10 o'clock hour. And so I hope that you will get ready for that conversation and give us a call. Again, 701-271-1100. And coming off of our 250-year celebration for the United States of America, I just wanted to express again the gratitude that I felt, not only, of course, when President Trump – I was privileged to sit in last Wednesday when President Trump came to Medora, and it was just a special day – to watch all of the festivities over there and the opening of the TR Library. And it's just an incredible facility. I can't wait to go see it. And, they've done such an incredible job. I mean, first class all the way around in terms of the library. It appears just pictures and videos and all the interviews that I saw. I saw that Scott Hennin had a great interview with Doug Burgum as they walked through the center. And I watched that, and it was just, again, very well done in first class, great for North Dakota. But really, the thing that I really felt, again, going through last weekend in 4th of July, that holiday is many of our favorite holiday. And But I saw this from Jordan Peterson, who is not an American. He's a Canadian citizen. Many of you, of course, know the name of Jordan Peterson. But he posted this that I felt was worth reading because so many of us living in this country, we don't really understand anything else. We don't know anything else. And so last Wednesday, you know, when I was sitting behind the microphone here, I shared this. I said my thought for any young person, whether it's late teens or early 20s, is to go out and experience other cultures and to be able to see other cultures outside of course, the United States. And what it does to me and my experience has opened up kind of just an awareness that we do live in a beautiful country, beautiful in terms of the unprecedented liberty and freedom and pursuit of just the American dream. And but this is what Jordan Peterson said, and he wrote a letter to the Americans from a non-American. He said, to the Americans, I've traveled all over the world. I've familiarized myself with many places and met many people, and I'm a Canadian, although I'm privileged to reside once again in the States. And here's something I've noticed, and it's a key element of America's continuing greatness. You Americans value success, and you believe in its existence. This is something that doesn't really happen anywhere else in the world. Even in other free democracies, the United Kingdom, Finland, Sweden, and Norway, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, Germany, France, and the Netherlands, great countries. A counterproductive cynicism too often reigns in those countries. Success is equated with exploitation. Ambition is looked upon with contempt. This happens sometimes in the United States, too, particularly among the miserable progressives who confuse their resentment, ingratitude, and unearned skepticism with wisdom. That's a great line right there. But in your great country, by and large, striving is admired and success celebrated. This means that more people strive and succeed in the U.S. than anywhere else, and it's increasingly obvious. You remain stunningly more innovative and productive than any people anywhere else on the planet. And so I say, as all should who are fortunate enough to live in the Western world, let alone America, thank God for the United States. Thank God for the wisdom of its founders. Thank God for its faith in the free market and in the natural rights of man. Happy birthday, you Yankees and Southerners. Long may your admirable country dominate the world. And this is from a non-American. He goes on to say, long may your freedom and hope provide an example to those suffering everywhere at the hands of their malevolent states. May your 2.5 centuries of unparalleled success be just the beginning. Your country is the light of the world and the city on the hill. Thank God for the USA. Happy 250th, Dr. Jordan B. Peterson. I read that, and again, I felt the gratitude of living in this country. And you know, what really gets under my skin at times is this ingratitude for the country that we live in. And I hope that this last weekend really was just another reminder of the greatness of our country and how blessed we are to live here. You know, I do and can't stress enough this time that we live in. You know, Thomas Sowell, he talks about freedom in ways that no one else does. And you know, I'm no student of Thomas Sowell, but I have over the years been exposed to some of his stuff. And I'm telling you, the freedom that we have is just unlike anywhere else in the world. And so we're grateful for it. And we want to talk about it today here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Coming up, we're going to have a conversation with Representative Jared Hendricks. And we're going to look forward. We're going to look forward again into what's coming up on the ballot here in the general election. We do have a couple of constitutional measures that will be on the ballot and, you know, initiated measures. And so we're going to start the education process about what those look like and want to hear your thoughts on those. Feel free again to give us a call, 701-271-1100, or text in those questions and comments. To set up the conversation with Representative Hendricks, the North Dakota Supreme Court again blocked the term limits measure that was initiated by the legislature to put on the ballot. But it did go to the Supreme Court, and they voted on it. There was some opposition to what was passed in the legislature, and we're going to talk about it with Representative Hendricks coming up on the other side of the break. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Or morning. Sorry, Monday morning. Stay with us. It is 9:20 here on this beautiful Monday morning. Welcome to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. Always appreciate, again, Steve letting me sit behind the microphone. And we have a great rest of the show coming up for you. We're joined now by Representative Jared Hendricks. And I asked Jared Hendricks to come on to discuss the Supreme Court, North Dakota Supreme Court ruling that just a couple of, I think a week ago, came out and basically put the kibosh to what the legislature tried to do in changing over some of the term limits discussion that you as the voters voted in back in 2022. And so, Representative Hendricks, thank you for joining the Steve Hallstrom Show. How are you today?
Hey, Andrew, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for joining us. And Representative Hendricks, I know that you were a big proponent and backer of the initial measure to get that term limits measure on the ballot. And, of course, we know that it was passed. And so here we are now trying to somewhat manage what this looks like for the state of North Dakota. And the legislature, if you want to maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about what they attempted to do and then what the Supreme Court ruling did in return, if you could give us an update on that.
Yeah, well, and it's okay. I might just very briefly trace it back a little further than that, just to kind of reiterate the journey that we've been on. But, you know, when we got this on the ballot in 2022, there were over 46,000 North Dakotans that signed the petition to get term limits on the ballot, which at the time, as far as I know, was a record. I think that's been since surpassed by the school lunch measure signatures. And then on top of that, you know, when it was actually on the ballot in November, 150,000 people voted for this. And yet, even during that process initially, the Secretary of State at the time had attempted to keep the measure off the ballot. Now, I will point out that Secretary of State had been serving for about 30 years. I'm not saying that that guarantees that he was doing something wrong. I'm just saying you can't make the irony of this up. You have somebody in there for over three decades who made a decision to keep the term limits measure off the ballot. And it turns out even when that happened in 2022, you know, we filed suit and the state Supreme Court in that case also ruled in favor of term limits and basically said that the Secretary of State erred in trying to keep it off the ballot. And so they'd said that it has to be placed on the ballot. And of course, voters approved that. So then fast forward to here we are almost 4 years later, where the legislature in the meantime had made several proposals to try to change the term limits. And the language in the term limits article says that the legislature cannot initiate any changes to the legislative term limits. That was in the article that voters approved, because obviously politicians have an incentive to want to tamper with their own term limits, so we lockboxed them out of that. And so there were attempts to do this in 2023 during that session, which didn't go anywhere. And then there were multiple attempts in the 2025 session. And what the Supreme Court just struck down was the one proposal that did make its way through the 2025 session. It did pass. And that's what the Supreme Court recently struck down, because the language, again, in that term limits article is clear. It said that the legislature cannot initiate changes to their own term limits. So the Supreme Court said that that language is very clear.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember Representative Hendricks, I think it was in a 23 session right after, you know, the term limits was voted in. I remember I watched a hearing that was held at during the legislature, and you showed up and you testified at the hearing. And I'll never forget the just almost the anger that was expressed during that hearing of, you know, representatives and good representatives. And so I'm really curious on, you know, and I think it's an obvious answer, but why is there such a disdain for this? I think among even good legislators, is there, what's your initial thoughts? Like, I just am surprised again at some of the reaction of what I've seen from legislators around this.
Yeah, it's a fair question, and you know, I think that there's genuinely a philosophic view amongst many of them that they just really think it's bad policy, which it's perfectly fair to debate the pros and cons of term limits. You know, my view on term limits, obviously I'm in favor, but me saying I'm in favor doesn't mean I'm saying there's no cons. Like, there's pros and cons to a lot of reforms.
Absolutely.
I just believe the pros outweigh the cons. And so so I think that's part of it. But, you know, there is also this sort of visceral, emotional reaction, and I think you saw that in the committee, again, even from some good legislators otherwise who are friends that I agree with. But I think it's just the institutional inertia that exists in politics. So even when you have good people that go there, they stay a long time, they get into the political circles, they become associated with one another, with the lobbying groups that the state employs. I'm not saying it's all bad or immoral or nefarious. It's just that you get locked into that. And so you get into this mindset where you're exposed to an extremely high level of information on every issue that gets decided. And so there's this sort of expectation that, well, we're the experts and we need to have this system in place where we, and I think it's under good intentions for the most part, actually, with at least a lot of the legislators. I can't say it's under good intention for some of the bureaucrats and the lobbyists. It may not be. But for a lot of the legislators, I think it probably is, that they just think that that experience and that involvement that they have helps them be better legislators. And I think it's flawed for a lot of reasons we can get into if you want to, but I think it's short-sighted. And I think, you know, look, at the end of the day, change is hard. And I think that that's very difficult for a lot of the folks that have been in there for a long time.
Yeah, you know, and I mentioned this earlier when I was setting up this interview, Jared. I for me, I didn't vote for the measure because I, you know, I felt like, you know, in 2022, I'm like, you know what, elections are term limits, so to speak. And but, you know, I was kind of like, if it passes, it's, I'm okay with it. But I didn't, you know, I had some disagreements maybe at the beginning. But after it was voted in and I saw the reaction, I'm like, maybe it was needed or is needed to just shake things up a little bit. Now, my question, and we only have a couple minutes left in this segment, but my question is, from your perspective, are there any, like, long-term, like, really negative consequences of this as far as finding good people to run? Do you see any concerns that we're limiting the pool of good candidates or, I mean, what potential drawbacks do you have with this, do you see at all with this in place now?
Well, I'll say that I always respond to facts and information. And if, you know, 10, 20 years from now, we have a disastrous state government and you can somehow empirically tie it to term limits, then maybe I change my mind. But I don't imagine that happening. And in all the states that have passed term limits on their state legislatures, not one of them, not one of those states has undone it. So they're very popular. I think it's always a challenge to find good candidates. So I think the answer is that it depends on how we react to it. I think that there's things we can do to be more proactive to get our legislators, especially our freshmen, up to speed faster to be more effective. And those are going to be the things I'm focused on.
That's very fair. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Representative Hendricks will stick with us here for the next break. We're going to dive into a couple of different topics, but give us a call, 701-271-1100, or shoot us a text as well, and look forward to continuing the conversation with Representative Hendricks coming up. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve, and we are joined by Representative Jared Hendricks, who is no stranger to North Dakota politics, and has been effective over the years in getting people out in a lot of different areas and things and measures, and now he is in the North Dakota State Legislature, but we're having a conversation around term limits. But just want to maybe shift the conversation, Representative Hendricks, into more of just, again, constitutional measures and just ballot measures in particular. This fall, we are going to be voting on another constitutional measure that would, or I should say a ballot measure that would change our that process of needing 60% of a majority to put a constitutional measure in place. And want to maybe get your thoughts on this as well. Where did this come from? Did it come from the legislature? And what ramifications do you see with this upcoming ballot measure?
Yeah, so it was another measure that was placed on the ballot by the legislature. and it basically says that any change to our state constitution must achieve at least the 60% threshold of the votes cast, as opposed to the current standard, which is 50% plus one, a simple majority. And, you know, this is kind of one attempt in a series of attempts from the legislature over many recent years that I would say, I would describe as attempts to certainly to limit or change or alter the powers reserved to the people to bring initiative petitions to the ballot in the first place. You know, we just passed one this past June that requires a single subject provision, which passed by a pretty wide margin. I was not in favor of that because I think the language is far too unclear what single subject is. Nobody could actually define what that is. I brought that issue up on the floor of the state house, and I couldn't get an answer from any legislator in that body, yet that body approved it and put it on the ballot. But the people voted for it, so it's now the law. Now, this measure in November, the 60% threshold, you know, I think it's just like the last one. I think it's a measure that comes to some extent from good intentions. You know, it seems like a reasonable thing to suggest that it should be a higher threshold for changing our Constitution, because the argument is, well, it should not be easy to change our Constitution. Now, having been involved in two ballot measures that did change our Constitution, I can tell you that it's not easy. It takes a lot of hard work, takes a lot of resources. And so I agree it shouldn't be easy, and I don't think it is. But I think if we pass something like this, we got to think long term here. You know, if you pass a measure, and let's say that it's something that the people in North Dakota realize within a few years that they don't like this, maybe it wasn't a good idea. Well, now you have this 60% threshold. It's going to be that much harder to undo something and change it down the road. And I think that that is a very short-sighted aspect of this.
What's your take on, you know, the argument, I guess, for something like this is really out-of-state money. You know, out-of-state money coming in and funding some of these campaigns to change the Constitution of, and, you know, be basically the people that have no interest in the state in some ways by living out of state but pumping resources into it. I mean, is this part of it? Are people afraid of out-of-state interests coming in and changing the Constitution? Is that where this came from?
Yeah, that's a big part of the argument. Now, I fully agree that addressing the issue of big money in politics is, I mean, I agree. It's a problem. In fact, I co-sponsored a bill last session to try to address the dark money issue, and unfortunately, we couldn't get anywhere with that bill, and there's some legitimate First Amendment questions around it as well. But that said, yes, you're right. That is the argument that a lot of these ballot measures, including, frankly, term limits that I was involved in, we had the U.S. Term Limits Organization provided some funding for us. So there is concerns about out-of-state money, but I actually think the 60% threshold is going to make the out-of-state money much worse. Because if you think about some billionaire in California or New York or wherever, if we have a 50% plus one standard right now and they write a $2 million check to help fund a ballot measure, so we raise the threshold to 60%, oh, okay, they'll just write a $6 million check. I mean, money is nothing to some of these people with deep pockets. Mm-hmm. And then we've just made it difficult for the in-state people to actually raise funds and organize to work against it. So you've just basically raise the cost of getting something supported or opposed. And again, like I said, down the road, if we ever want to change it, and it has that 60% threshold, unless it's a statutory change, it's going to be very difficult to do that. So, you know, it's a complicated thing. I'm sympathetic to the concerns about out-of-state money, but I do think this will actually probably make it worse.
Interesting. I know you are working on some things regarding some healthcare reform. Do you want to share what you're working on for the next legislative session?
Yeah, so I've got a number of bills on various healthcare reform. And, you know, Andrew, you and I have talked a lot. I mean, as conservatives, I feel like often we're maybe a little too silent on healthcare issues. And you see sometimes this comes more from the Democrat or liberal side. And you think Obamacare and other changes over the years. And I'm really concerned that if we don't, as conservatives, try to offer real solutions to fix healthcare and to move towards more market-based reforms, that the only thing remaining will be socialized medicine. And we know from other countries that doesn't work well. There's serious problems with that. And so we have to offer solutions as conservatives and Republicans. So that's what I'm working on. The main bill that I'm going to put in again, which I put in last session, it failed by one vote in the state Senate. So I'm putting it in again, and it's healthcare price transparency. And this actually was a major initiative of the first term for Trump, and they're trying to do it again. And the reason we need to mirror it at a state level, because it's mostly a federal issue, but we need to mirror it at a state level because the federal government is just proven to not be capable of enforcing this. CMS, the Center for Medicaid Services, is just not able to accurately enforce this. And so we need to add another layer of state-level oversight, even some state-level penalties, so that hospitals and other providers fully disclose the cost of what care is. Because when you go to get care, nobody knows what anything costs. And for some reason, it's the only area of the economy where we think this is okay. If I go into Menards, I don't have to argue with them about how much a shovel costs. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And we know just from some limited data, I'll give you just one quick example. If you wanted to do a C-section at the hospital in Minot, and this was as of a few years ago, so the information could be out of date, but they did a secret shopper program through the state health insurance, through the North Dakota Insurance Department, and the cost of getting that C-section in Minot was $5,000, and in Fargo, it was over $25,000.
Wow.
So that's like a 600% variation in price. And I guarantee you, most people don't know that. And most people would be willing to drive maybe a few hours if they could save thousands of dollars. So we need to force transparent pricing. We need to get the information out there. It's not an attack on our hospitals. I actually think over time that information will help our providers to better compete and to specialize and offer better care and services, and it'll start to function a little better like a market.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it sounds interesting. I think every one of us would be interested in seeing exactly what it is that we're paying for. I mean, health insurance, of course, is an animal that I don't know if we can tackle in a way that makes sense to anybody. Anybody that has a conversation about health insurance, it feels like you are lost within the first couple of seconds going through the policy. And so appreciate you tackling that. Lastly, we just have a couple minutes left. Want to just hit just briefly on the school lunch measure coming up. And so this was, of course, debated in the legislature, ultimately failed in the legislature, and now we're going to, as a state, it's going to be on the ballot. Do we want free school lunches for everybody, kind of a universal free school lunch? And Representative Hendricks, let me know your thoughts. Like, coming up here, do you think it's going to pass, and what's kind of the will of the people? It feels to me like this, the groundswell of support is pushing this towards a pass, but I know there's some deep concerns among some around it. But what do you think is going to happen in November around school lunches?
Well, yeah, you saved the tough one for the last minute here.
I did.
I do personally think it will pass. There's certainly going to be opposition, and, you know, it's impossible to predict. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it won't pass. You know, whenever the government gets involved in any kind of new program or new service, there's always concerns about inefficiency, and those are very legitimate questions. I did vote for the school lunch bill this special session, although I do think it was flawed, and I wanted to get it over to the Senate to get some changes made. So my focus really is going to be on trying to make this work better if it does pass. I think it probably will. I don't agree with the measure being for the language being put in constitutionally. I really think it should be a statutory issue. So I don't agree with that. But again, it is a popular issue. I guess it passes. And so I want to focus on trying to make it work well and trying to make it as fiscally responsible as possible. You know, we need to deal with the fact that there's a lot of waste thrown away with these school lunches. I think we need to have some contingencies on that. I think we also need to make sure that we're getting the full federal reimbursement at the same time. So we're making sure that paperwork gets in so the state isn't losing that money and then having to pay for an even larger amount. And then the other thing we need to do is I want to make sure if we're spending all this money, I want the money to go to North Dakota food producers. You know, we already do get a lot of local beef in some of these school districts, which is great, but I don't want all this money to go to some big out-of-state food corporation. We produce a lot of food in North Dakota, so let's pay our North Dakota food producers for our school lunches.
Couple quick questions for you from a texter, Representative Hendricks. It says, speaking of out-of-state money, question number one, is Representative Hendricks a homeowner or renter currently?
I am a renter.
And number two, was Representative Hendricks a non-resident when he was pushing balloting initiatives?
No, I was not a non-resident.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the time, Representative Hendricks, and it's, you know, these are great debates, and this is what I've learned is that we can disagree on some things, but ultimately I think there's a lot of people in our state legislature that want what's best for us, and so I appreciate your service and wish you all the best. Thank you for joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Stick with us here. This is Andrew Sletten filling in for Steve on this beautiful Monday morning, and I know many of us are trying to wipe the tiredness out of our eyes, and it was a busy weekend. We're trying to get back into the groove of it, but please give us a call here and share your thoughts on the conversation we had with Representative Hendricks. I want to share some more thoughts I have on the school lunch program after the break. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I'm looking to my right on this in this beautiful Flag Family Studio, and my right is to the east, looking at I-29, and the skies look great that way, but I'm also able to look out to the west, and it's starting to look a little dark. And super producer Addison, he mentioned that he just had his vehicle washed, and so I'm going to blame these thunderstorms coming up on you, Addison.
You know, on our sister station, WDOI Radio, on Weather and Ag and Focus with Bridget Riedel and Dean Wysocki, we came to the same conclusion. So every time it has rained in the last 2 months, you can personally blame me, and it's because I've gotten a car wash.
That's right. That's right. Well, I have an unlimited car wash pass, and so I have the luxury of being able to, you know, get it again the next day if I need it. But
I should really just invest in one of those at this point.
It is Murphy's Law, though. It is like it's gonna rain if you get a car wash, and I can't say that we would push away the rain at this point. My lawn definitely could use it with the heat that we've been experiencing, and can never complain about just a good rain this time of year. But welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Again, this is Andrew Sletten. Thank you to Steve for letting me sit in. And I want to, this last segment, touch on, if you are in North Dakota, you have obviously probably heard of the school lunch measure in some form and fashion. It's been debated quite a bit, not only when the legislature was in session, but now, of course, it is on the ballot. There was, as Representative Hendricks said, a record number of people that signed a petition to have it on the ballot. So coming up in November, you as the voter are going to decide if you want free school lunches for everybody. And, you know, I know Steve has some really strong opinions on this. And I think I'm personally a little bit in the middle on it. And I want to give you my thoughts on it. The reason why I'm a little ambivalent on it is just there's so many things that our state legislature spends money on frivolously that I think this is one area that if it is spent, it wouldn't be money wasted. Now, when I say that, I know it's a huge money, and in principle, I'm against any program like this. But the problem is we're already down the road 1,000 miles when it comes to government programs and payouts. And so the adage is definitely true. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Like, somebody's paying for it. And it puts definitely puts the state of North Dakota on the hook for a lot of money. But here's kind of in principle also where I'm at on it. And many don't know this, but even in our state, early back as the 1990s and 1980s, there was severe restrictions in place in Century Code regarding even homeschooling. You know, at one point in North Dakota, it was illegal to homeschool. Did you know that, Addison? You couldn't homeschool your kids.
I didn't.
And so over the last 20, 30 years, there has been significant improvement, I think, in some of those areas regarding educational freedom and educational choice. And, you know, this is one of those topics that, to me, you know, in our state constitution, children are mandated to be educated. It is the state's responsibility to educate our kids. That's in our state constitution. And so when we discuss free school lunches, yes, there is no such thing as a free lunch. And I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this and some of the pros and cons of this. You know, it definitely is. It's a hard issue to talk about because, again, in principle, I'm against it. But at the same time, there are many and you know, we definitely many would say that, well, there's a large, you know, a good population of those under the poverty level. And I have those numbers. I can get them to you here in a minute about those who actually receive right now currently free lunch. And so nobody is going hungry, I think is the point. And that's a very valid point. But at the same time, we've accepted the payment of lunches at a certain level, but then we don't accept it at a larger level. And would love to hear your thoughts on this. Again, give us a call, 701-271-1100. You can also text in your comments to that same number. A couple of texts have already come in. It says, not just lunch, but breakfast also. Correct. There is, you know, the National School Lunch Program right now, currently. There's also the National Breakfast Program, which, again, those students whose family's income is at or below 130% of the poverty level, they can receive free meals. And a child whose family's income is between 130% and 185% of the poverty level can receive reduced cost meals. And students in this category are not charged more than 40 cents per meal. So there is a large number already of you know, students who are receiving either free or discounted lunches. And another texter has a comment. I don't know about school lunches. I am old, but when I was in school, there would have been a heck of a lot of waste of food. That's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, just the thought of this is interesting. We have about a minute left, but we have Steve on the line. Wants to talk about school lunch. Steve, thanks for calling in the Steve Hallstrom Show.
Yeah, I'm generally against that, although I'm kind of like you. I understand the logic behind it. But the concept of somebody pays for everything for me, I think that inbreeds in children is not good. What I would suggest is that there's a big sign at every school cafeteria saying this food is paid by the taxpayers of North Dakota or the hardworking taxpayers of North Dakota or something to that effect. So at least there's a subliminal or not so subliminal message that somebody is paying for it. It's not free.
Interesting. There is no such thing as a free lunch. Steve, thanks for calling in. Appreciate right. those comments. And we are coming up against the break here to the 10 o'clock hour and want to continue this conversation and others. And so make sure you stick with us here and give us a call. We want to hear your texts and comments. I want to have a conversation with you in the 10 o'clock hour on this topic and also on data centers. So come prepared for that conversation. Give us a call, 701-271-1100. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. And I have... I had the privilege of filling in for Steve a few times and always appreciate the opportunity to do it. And thank you for joining us here on this beautiful Monday morning. And I know many of us are still trying to recover from the weekend and all of the festivities that, you know, I was up with my parents. They live in central North Dakota, and so my family spent a couple of days with them. And I just had a great time over the 4th, and, you know, we got back late Sunday night or Saturday night. And then we had church yesterday, had a great time there, and just has been a busy weekend. And so we're back to the grind today. And so thank you for making us part of your morning. And thank you again to Steve for letting me fill in. If you're unfamiliar with me, I'm just I wear a couple different hats here in town. I am a pastor of Antioch Church and blessed to lead that congregation and launched a new church back in 2020. So we're about 6 years into a church plant. And we just had some exciting news. We just signed a purchase agreement on the building. We kind of grew out of the space that we're in currently. So we're thankful to have a purchase agreement on a beautiful building just right down the road from the Flag Studios here, right off of I-29. You'll see the sign this fall on a beautiful building right, again, off of I-29 there in South Fargo. Looking forward to that. Also have the window and door store here in town. So kind of my day job, my tent-making business is we do replacement windows and doors. And then we also have the bathroom side where we do some bathroom remodels. And so wear a lot of different hats. And, but really, you know, I'm so thankful again to be able to discuss some of these topics of faith, family, and freedom that the flag stands for. So it's always a pleasure filling in and want this hour to have a conversation with you, the listener, around artificial intelligence, It's one of those things that constantly is changing, and it's so impossible for us as the lay people to know exactly what's happening in artificial intelligence and what the future looks like. But this is what we do know, is that the data center that funds, or I should say funds, that drives and supplies all of the AI, but also just everything, everything in the grid, the internet grid, is supplied through the data centers, and they're just becoming, I'm telling you, some of the conversations I've seen around it, it feels like there is a lot of misinformation, but there's also just some skepticism, and I think that's true with any new technology, is we are skeptic by nature of like, hey, what's this going to bring? And really the answer to that question changes almost weekly, as far as, you know, who's managing the artificial intelligence and who is regulating the artificial intelligence, who is supplying the artificial intelligence, what's the end game? And a lot of those answers we just don't know, but I want to have that conversation with you here in the 10 o'clock hour. And do you have any reservations around artificial intelligence and specifically data centers? Some of the misinformation, and when I say misinformation, is just there's a lot of propaganda around both the pros and the cons, I'd say, of these data centers. But the reality is they're here to stay. We have one here in our backyard in Harwood, of course, Ellendale being a large one, and throughout the state, and not just North Dakota. This is not just a North Dakota thing. I know some in Utah, funded by Kevin O'Leary, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, have also made some national news. And so I think it's a topic that you're going to see a lot more of, even though we have seen a lot already. And so to be prepared for this conversation just is helpful. But want to get to a couple of texts we've had, and thank you for everyone who has interacted with the show here at 701-271-1100. You can continue to text and call at that number. But to follow up on the last segment, we were talking about the school lunch measure that is going to be on the ballot coming up in November. And do you think it's going to pass? Do you think it's going to pass? Representative Hendricks thinks it's going to pass. And there was a huge groundswell of support just to get it on the ballot. So I think it's going to be, again, an interesting couple of months in having this discussion. But a couple of texters has some comments saying, regarding school lunches and free school lunches, you get what you pay for. The school lunches will not be appetizing or of any quality for the students. Coming from Minnesota and seeing how this works both before and after free school lunches came in, After they came in, the food quality plummeted and the waste at least doubled, if not more, and the vast majority of kids are bringing lunches from home. That's interesting. The amount of waste, he says, has increased after free school lunches. North Dakota has a way of taking care of this, and I would suggest the least amount of government, the best government. And again, I don't disagree with that in principle. I think it's exactly less government is always the answer. But when it comes to school and education, I think we're at a pivotal moment in educational freedom. And like, we're all waking up to the fact, especially since COVID, that, you know, public education has provided, it has met a need in certain places. But again, I mentioned before the top of the hour break that in North Dakota, it was illegal to homeschool your children. You know, and that was just a couple of decades ago. And so we have seen, and we are seeing, a seismic shift in just the approach to school. So what about this? Is like, our state constitution, it mandates that we provide an education for our kids. Okay, so we are paying for that. And nobody has any problem paying for education in North Dakota. But we don't have any real school choice legislation in place in North Dakota. That's been a hot topic of mine. That's been a passion project of mine, to see the state of North Dakota really have robust school choice, because this conversation goes along with it, where, you know, we are mandating, so to speak, children to be at school, but then we're also, and we're paying for that. We're paying for their education. We're paying for their teachers. We're paying for their sports programs. We're paying for their buses and transportation. We're paying for all of that as the state, and we're good with that. But then when it comes to feeding those children who we say you have to be there, then, you know, we aren't. Well, we are in some ways, but we aren't in others. Now, again, in principle, least government the better. So when it comes to education policy, how about we say that is the case for private education? Like my family, we do homeschool, and so we have made the decision at cost, at personal expense to us. Like we don't receive anything for schooling our children, and we're not asking for anything. We just want the ability and the freedom to be able to educate our kids in the way that we feel is best for our family. And homeschool is good for some families. It's not good for others. I get it. For us, it's been a huge blessing. And, you know, but there is a cost to that. And, of course, I pay property taxes, and the local school district, they get the money for my children, even though they don't attend the public school. And so we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Give us a call at 701-271-1100. We have about a minute left in the segment, but we want to get to Dana, who is wants to talk about the school lunch. Dana, thank you for calling in to the Steve Hallstrom Show.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to mention on this term limit deal, too. You know, we might get some people in there to expose some of the insider trading. I don't think they're probably get a little nervous about that. So on the school lunch thing, we got a program now that's taking care of it for about $3.5 million a year, and they're not even using it all. And they want to increase it to $67 million a year with a $3 million a year increase after that. So do the math, people. And then who's these outside people that are pushing this?
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to tap into our legacy fund so we never do get property tax relief. This is no good.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate those comments, Dana. And this is exactly what we're hoping to hear from you, the listener, on where you're at, because it's coming up, obviously, in November. And again, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think the big thing, to your term limits point, the term limits point is interesting, because I definitely feel that resistance and pushback of, you know, why is there such kind of hostile thoughts around term limits? Like, if we're in the space for the right reasons, if we're in public service for the right reasons, I don't know if we if we welcome term limits. I think we'd all be in agreement that we are looking to not just expose corruption, but just to make state government as efficient as possible. So thank you, Dana, for calling in. Appreciate
That thing was about experience. That's just an excuse to make people try to vote for him again. Anybody's got enough brains to read the laws and make decisions.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for calling in. Appreciate your thoughts. The school lunch thing, another texter says, we're going to get to a couple more of these before the break. Another texter says, providing school lunch for families that truly need it makes sense, but if we're giving free lunches to families that can easily afford it, that's not fair to those of us who don't have kids in the school system or were never blessed with children. Working on property taxes would help everyone, those with kids in the school system and those without. Let's talk about that on the other side of the break, because initiated measures are interesting. The majority of North Dakotans didn't vote for property tax relief. And so let's talk about that and compare it maybe to the school lunch program. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is 10:20 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Thank you for tuning in on this Monday morning. Almost said afternoon again, Addison, and used to fill in for Steve when he was on in the afternoon. And so it's taking a little muscle memory to say morning. But good morning, everyone. Hope you had a great 4th of July weekend. And thank you for spending some time with us here this morning. Have a couple of texts to get to. We've been discussing, of course, the school lunch program that is going to be on the ballot coming up in November. Couple of texters had some great comments. It says, what happened to people being responsible for the cost of their children? When we grew up, many times the only school lunch was a peanut butter sandwich. I think it's incredibly stupid to pay for the lunches for parents of children who can afford it. And are we going, and then they ask the question, are we going to start buying people's houses next? Great points. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And Addison and I were talking in the break here, regarding the school lunch that we look forward to, this would be a great question for you, the listeners. Like, what lunch did you look forward to the most? Like, for me, it was pizza. Addison, before he shared that with me, before I shared that with him, but man, it's like, you remember the pizza that was in like a pan, almost like a cookie pan. And it was, I don't know where they bought it from. I don't know where it was from, but man, they'd cut it into little squares. And it, for us, it was always like Friday. It was always the, every other Friday type of deal was pizza day. And as a kid, I couldn't eat enough of it.
It, It was like a Tostino's like party pizza, but better in every conceivable way. And I'm still to this day searching for like a high as good as that pizza
Absolutely.
Was. Like
chicken burgers were a close second for me.
My school, I don't want to like bash on it. I don't know why they did this so often. My school, I went to a high school in Mohall, North Dakota. We must have had chicken patty on a bun 4 out of 5 days of the week, like from like ninth grade until I graduated. I don't know like where they got their chicken patty supply from. But there were weeks where it was just chicken patty on a bun all chicken 5 patty. Days of the week. It was too much at the end of the school year.
I don't know if I had any that I really, really detested. I mean, I just ate it because that's what was in front of me. But chicken patties were pretty legit. Put some mayo on the top.
They were good at first, but like how many chicken patties on a bun can you have?
Absolutely. Let's ask the listeners, Addison, what's your favorite school lunch meal?
What's your favorite? What was your least favorite?
Yeah, and there you go.
If it's not clear, chicken patty on a bun fills me with dread to this day.
We had a great email come in regarding the education topic. And Dan, thank you for emailing this in. And I loved when I read this. I loved the sentiments. And I think this is really the heartbeat of North Dakota and what has made and just America so special. This story that Dan has sent in, he says, Andrew, North Dakota may have tried to ban homeschooling, but all my learning was done at home. My mom taught me to read at the kitchen table after the first grade teacher failed. I read history in the books my parents kept in the house. My dad made algebra relevant by applying it to speed and farming. Once he pointed out the 60 mile an hour was a mile a minute. Once he did that, I was calculating speed all the time. By the time I graduated high school, I could mix a batch of spray. I've been there. I know what that's like. Then use the right nozzles, spray pressure, and speed to run the tank dry on the headland on the last round. When I was going to drive through an intersection, when I had the right of way to an approaching semi that he saw could not possibly have stopped, he taught me a life lesson. You can be right or dead right. He taught me that sometimes the easiest way to get things done is to do the hard work. My mom taught me that wait until your father gets home really, really meant something. And I love that, Dan. Thank you for sharing that. And my experience is no different. I was blessed to grow up in a home where my dad and mom both taught me those life lessons. And I was schooled at Class B school, Garrison, North Dakota, Go Troopers. I had a great experience there. I had great teachers, and I'm thankful for that experience. But you're right, Dan. I mean, my learning really did happen at home. Even if homeschooling was banned, I learned the most at home. We have caller Hal on the line. He wants to talk about the school lunch program. Hal, thank you so much for calling in to the Steve Hallstrom Show.
Yeah, I don't mind the school lunches, but I'm against the school breakfast. When I grew up, when we walked to school, and no mom would let her little kid get out and walk a quarter mile to school and it's 30 below without something in their little stomachs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, Hal. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, I mean, right now, I think there's more than just obviously the lunches. It is the entire food program. And so we had a previous caller that mentioned a little bit of the cost. Like, listen, the costs are very, very, very much in the discussion. It's a very real point to consider. But in general, again, I want us to maybe take a step back and say, well, our kids are mandated to go to school anyway, and we pay huge sums of money for that. And here's the reality is you could cut a portion of the administrative budget for our schools and never see an impact in our local schools. The administrative, and I don't have these numbers in front of me, but just from what I've observed over the course of, you know, following school choice legislation, the rise and the spike of administrative costs in our schools is staggering. And so if we just look at a budget, I don't know if I could give you a guarantee, but I could say that we could get really close to paying for the school lunch program by just evaluating and auditing where our administrative levels are like in terms of our public schools. And what's the impact? You know, I think the impact of administrative costs that would be reduced drastically, and then let's just say we shifted and transferred those funds into free school lunches, I think you would see a better or larger impact. Now, is it wasteful? It could be. You know, it could be. That's the thing, is any government program like this is going to come with waste. and fraud and abuse and all of those things that, that happen. And I'm not for any of those things. But I think it's a more nuanced argument than just saying no, because we already have it, obviously, and everybody's okay with having it. But if we expand it, yeah, it's going to cost us more money. It's maybe going to provide more waste. And none of those things we're good with. But I don't know. It's just, to me, not an, a cut and dry answer. And would love to would love your thoughts on this. Give us a call, 701-271-1100. Texter commented, chicken patties on a bun, a filet mignon compared to half-frozen sandwich with lard and bread. Absolutely. I mean, the when I think of a chicken patty on a bun, it brings back such fond memories to my school. And so, yeah, thank you for sharing that. What other school lunches have stuck with me over the years? I hated salad day. That was the worst. As a kid, who likes salad?
My school just had, we just had like a permanent like salad bar that you could just go to.
Oh, that was bougie.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't have that. You could get salad any day if you wanted it.
Chef's salad, I think, is what they called it. And it was like, as a kid, you were stuck with it. We didn't have the fancy salad bar.
We had a, I don't know what they actually are, so bear with me here. They were called Crispitos, I think. And
oh, yeah.
The joke of the school was that they had just scraped off all the grease on the inside of the oven and rolled it into a tortilla and baked it, because that's what it seemed
to be. I remember
those. No one knew what they actually were. They were good.
They were good. It was like a chimichanga almost, but yeah, they were almost burnt to a crisp. And man, this is bringing back such powerful memories as a child of school lunches. But you know what I really loved was the school lunch ladies. I have some incredible stories about school lunch ladies. There's one, her name was Margaret. She loved me. For some reason, she absolutely loved me. But she would bring me Addison homemade caramel rolls.
Ooh.
Yeah, and they were absolutely unbelievable. And I was pretty fortunate because she would also add a little bit extra portion to my food, too. So I was pretty spoiled.
Lunch ladies always have their favorites.
Class B schools, and they do have their favorites, and I was blessed to be a part of it. This is Andrew Sletton filling in for Steve. Stick with us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is 10:32 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Hope you're having a great Monday morning, and appreciate you tuning in. And this is Andrew Sletton again sitting in for Steve. Steve, I'm not sure when he's going to be back. Addison, do you know when he's going to be back?
I believe tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't know. I keep getting thrown off. We've had so many people come and go with vacation the last week. People are here. I thought they'd be gone. People are gone. I thought they'd be here. I don't know where anyone is.
I think
is
he's going to be in tomorrow. And if you tuned in hoping to hear Steve, I apologize, but he will be back tomorrow. And but again, thank you to Steve for letting me fill in. And the show has kind of been hijacked by our conversation around school lunches. What was your favorite school lunch growing up? What did you despise the most growing up? And, you know, I told Addison this off air, but, you know, kids don't really care. And I mean, they don't care except if it's really gross, and unless they are raised to be picky eaters, which I didn't have the luxury to be a picky eater. And I have tried to, with the best of my ability, taught my children to not also be a picky eater. We eat what's in front of us, and kids, they don't really care. Obviously nutritional value is important. But man, that pizza, I don't know what they did, but it is absolutely amazing. If you want to talk about that, we'd love to talk about that. Also had a text that came in regarding term limits, and if I can get it pulled up here, it says, would term limits affect the seniority for some of those people in government so that they can get on the committees that make a difference? It's a great question. I think that's some of the challenge of term limits is that, you know, there is this in politics, you know, we talk about it as a good old boys club, but there's a lot of truth to the fact that, and I've heard people that have been in the halls of not just our state legislature, but, you know, in the Congress as well. And there is such a thing as, you know, you go along to get along. And then if you go along to get along, you do get seniority, and that they are powerful positions. And term limits definitely does affect some of that. But to Representative Hendricks' point, I think what we can do is to definitely address the onboarding process for state legislators. This is what I find fascinating around the term limits discussion, is that those in power think that they're the only ones, because they have been exposed to the budget and to Century Code, are the only ones that can continue to speak to it. Like, you know, this the kind of the expert, the claim to being an expert. And I appreciate that public service, and I appreciate those who definitely take the time and the effort to school themselves and be as good of a legislator as possible. But the reality is that a vast, vast, vast majority of individuals can come in and do the same job. Like, all of us are replaceable. And I don't mean that to be derogatory. It's just the truth is all of us are replaceable. And we, in terms of public service, I think definitely need to keep that in mind so that we don't get kind of that arrogancy and almost separation or detachment from the general population, which I think happens with politicians. And so, again, I didn't vote for the term limits measure. You know, I just felt like kind of philosophically, like every election could be a term limit if they're doing their job. Great. But I think there's it's not an easy discussion. But we have Lori on the line who wants to talk about administration overspending. Lori, thank you for calling into the Steve Hallstrom Show.
Hi there. I just really agreed with your comment about the overspending at the administrative level. As an educator myself, I've been in education here in North Dakota for over 25 years as a teacher. And I have seen now over the years how we have added more at the top. We now have superintendents, assistant superintendents.
Right.
We have administrative assistants. We have secretaries. We have curriculum specialists. We have all of these things now at the top that if we would cut those, or at least some of it, because when I first started education, there was a superintendent that did all of those same jobs. But now we feel like we have to have all these departments and all. And yet the first thing that gets cut then is at the kid level. We've taken away now music programs. We're taking away Spanish programs, different languages programs. All of these things are the first things that are cut. And, like, I'm in a district where, as a teacher, I haven't seen a raise of more than 1% in over 10 years as a teacher. So, and yet my administrators are always getting their at least 3% raise, right? Which I'm not saying that administrators don't have their place, but I think that we need to start thinking outside the box if we want to be able to fund things like food for kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these different programs, we want to offer all the sports and all of that. But yet, if we're going to keep adding at the administrative level and keep those six figures going, we just are going to outsource ourselves. This is why we have the problems that we have right now with declining enrollment, because we are cutting at the core level where the kids are.
Yeah.
We're cutting teachers and we're cutting programs. Instead of thinking outside the box and saying, you know what, maybe we can cut at the administrative level. Maybe we can cut things that wouldn't really affect the education of that kid.
Yeah.
And so that's all I want to say, but I really appreciated that your comment on that. And as an educator, I'm seeing it every year.
Wow, that's great perspective. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Lori, and appreciate those comments of being kind of in the thick of it. And I just pulled up, so the American Experiment, they have some great numbers on this. And from the year 2000 to the year 2022, they, in the state of Minnesota, they look at the percentage of change just in administrative staff and in teacher staff. And so the numbers is exactly what you described, Lori, where there's a 132% increase in the district administration staff compared to a 5% increase in the teacher staff. And I think that the focus is this, is the conversation around school choice in particular is, are we allowing our money to fund students or are we allowing our money to fund systems? And growing up in a small town, in particular for me, I mean, the school was the biggest employer. It was the hub of all activity. And that creates great community, but it also creates kind of this mentality that what will we do without X, Y, and Z in terms of administrative staff? Or, you know, if we do present school choice, you know, what's that going to do to our local community? And those are all real questions, but those questions don't center on the main point of education, and that's our students.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So thank you, Lori, for calling in the Steve Hallstrom Show. Appreciate your comments and thoughts. And Texter also commented in and said, regarding the school lunch menu, here we go, Addison, barbecues. On the school lunch debate, I think it's the perception of the public. Hold on a second. On the school lunch debate, I think it's the perception of the public that think children that are on the program get different meals. They don't understand that people working in the cafeteria have no knowledge of who's on the program and who's not. That is all done in the business office. No one knows who's on it and who's not. All children get the same meals no matter what. Yeah, I think that was part of the debate, is it maybe used to be that there would be a shaming almost, I think they call it, of those that weren't able to afford school lunch. And so that has been done away with, and I think that's a great thing that, you know, those serving the lunches, again, we talked a little bit about the lunch ladies and the incredible job that they do in, you know, just the impact they have with students. I could tell you stories about Margaret and the great time I had growing up. So thank you, Texter, for commenting. Another texter says, when I went to grade school, I think it should be, through high school, I had a weekly lunch ticket with 5 punches on it. I remember those lunch tickets. I would only use my lunch ticket for 3 meals: spaghetti with meat sauce, pulled pork barbecue sandwiches, and the stop sign shaped Mexican pizzas, which were called Fiesta Pizza. Is that it, maybe? Fiesta Pizza, Addison?
Interesting. I don't think we ever had those at mine.
No, mine weren't the stop sign. They were like the big and, you know.
Yeah, mine were like big rectangles.
Yeah, big rectangles in the pan. Later in life, as a truck driver making deliveries, I delivered to a food service company warehouse where I learned my beloved pulled pork barbecues and sauce came out of an industrial-sized can, as well as my spaghetti meat sauce and my favorite pizzas came frozen in case boxes. All my favorite lunch ladies ever did was add cheese to the spaghetti and give us a slice of bread. But this is what's great. He says, I would still eat it.
You know, if it's good, it's good. Cheese makes a big difference on a lot of things.
Add cheese to it. It's going to be okay.
And because of that, I'm putting a bounty out here. Someone must know those rectangle pizzas. I have to have an inside person somewhere. If someone knows where I can get my hands on those,
yeah,
give it to me.
You know, I wonder if it, you know, like U.S. Foods or one of the food service places where, you know, just you and I as the consumer probably can't go and purchase it. But, man, we should do some digging. Or if you as a caller, if you know where we can get our hands on some of that pizza. My kids being homeschooled, here's the problem and the tragedy of homeschooling, Addison, is they've never had one.
They've never known the joy of that pizza.
They've never known the joy.
They'll never know the joy of a chicken patty on a bun school way.
That's right, the school way. Absolutely.
They could have at least given us cheese with those. That would have made those better.
Man, it definitely feels like my children have missed out on a childhood that, you know, you and I, these are the fond memories that we're talking about 20 years later. Thank you, texters again and callers, for sending in your thoughts and comments. I think just to wrap up this conversation, for me, again, I'm kind of in the middle on this as a whole. I would say, you know, we as the voters are going to decide in November what we think about free school lunches. But I find it fascinating that we as the general public, we didn't vote in property tax relief. I want to follow up on one of the texts that came in about, you know, the more that we bloat the budget around maybe things like free school lunches, the less property tax relief that we'll see. And I understand that, but also at the same time, we as the voters with initiated measures, we said no to property tax reform. So as a whole, people are saying they're okay with the way that property taxes are, as far as, you know, we all think they're too high and the reform maybe we disagree on. But as a whole, people said, you know what, I'm good with paying property taxes as they are. Now, of course, we had some relief in the legislative session, but drastic relief and reform, we voted down. And I knew some good people that were for it. I knew some good people that were against it. I personally thought it was a great measure and wish that we would have, as a state, implemented that drastic tax relief to eliminate property taxes. But it all comes in part of this conversation. Here it is, Addison. Texter commented. He says, you can get your hands on those pizzas. They were actually produced by Tino's. You can get them at Dirk's Food Service, located in Rockford, Illinois. Just go online and search for them. You will find them. You will even find my beloved Fiesta pizzas also, but you'll probably have to pay $187 for a case. Wow, they are in the know.
You're gonna do the rest of the show without a producer. I got to drive to do. I'm out. I gotta
Rockford,
go.
Illinois. Here we go. Yeah. Thank you for texting that in. Thank you for tuning in to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Stick with us here for the last segment coming up. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Last segment here with Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. I think Steve will be in tomorrow, and so you want to make sure you tune back in tomorrow to hear Steve. I'm sure he'll have lots to say about the great 250 celebration for our great country. What a great weekend, and really week last week. What a great week for North Dakota with all that happened out in Medora and the Theodore Roosevelt Library. I just can't wait to see it. It absolutely looks incredible, and the things that I've seen, the videos I've seen of the walkthroughs has just been great. And so it was a great weekend, and we're all still trying to get back into the grind here on this Monday morning. But Addison, listen to this email. Dan emailed in and said, when I went to school, there were real lunch ladies who cooked real food. I love that. There were multiple potato houses in town, so we only had real mashed potatoes. Wow, that's bougie. They baked rolls and buns. Barbecue, a.k.a. Sloppy Joe Day, was the best. The only shortcut I remember taking while I was in school came after the Genio invited the turkey roll. But the gravy and potatoes were really homemade. Wow. But listen to this. This is what they said. On pizza day, we had big rectangle pizzas because they made the dough themselves, then piled on cheese, hamburger meat, and ham. Wow, that is definitely not the pizza I had.
No, that sounds magical, though. I am so glad I get to do lunch right after the show ends.
Oh, absolutely. But then he said, I only dreaded hot dish and hamburger gravy. Well, you know, I would disagree on the hot dish. In fact, this is a big bone of contention in my house. I love hot dish, and my wife absolutely despises it. And I know hot dish takes on a lot of different forms for a lot of different people, but to me it's just like hamburger and like this buttery sauce, noodles all mixed together, and you just can't beat it.
You know, I don't think I've ever just had I love tater tot hot dish.
Right.
I've never just had hot dish.
Right. Just take out the tater tots.
Is that just what it is?
I mean,
that's still good.
Yeah, I mean just like slathered in butter. And but, you know, at school lunch day, I don't know. I don't remember if we had hot dish or not. I'm sure we did. You know what? Tater tot hot dish obviously was a thing in school. And so it's been a fun day talking about our school lunches. And, you know, again, coming up in November, we as the voters, we're going to decide if we want to give free school lunches to every child in North Dakota. There is a big price tag associated with it. But also coming up on the ballot, again, as we discussed with Representative Hendricks, is there's a couple of things that you as the voters just should be aware of. Of course, free school lunches, but also there is a ballot measure that would make any constitutional measure, it would give it a 60% threshold in order to pass. And right now, it's just, as he mentioned, a simple majority. So it's 50% plus one. And so those are two things that we'll be voting on. One thing that we won't be voting on is what the Supreme Court just struck down, and that is in regards to term limits. And so all of these, I think, are great discussions for our state. And we're not the first state to go through these discussions. And, you know, we'll debate them. Are they good for us? Are they not good for us? And I think hopefully the show has helped maybe lay some of the groundwork for what's going to happen in November. Only have a couple minutes left, and I didn't get to one thing I really wanted to discuss today. Maybe the next time I fill in for Steve, we can discuss it. But that is the conversation around artificial intelligence. And I found some interesting facts about where the public is at in terms of artificial intelligence. A new Gallup poll found that 71% of Americans say they don't want a data center being built where they live, far more than the 53% who would oppose construction of a nearby nuclear power plant. So people are, there seems to be just shifting sentiment around data centers. And, you know, I you know, maybe next time we can get into this a little bit more. But, you know, I have found really interesting articles. And, of course, in social media, you'll see videos of just really antagonizing, you know, people that show up at some of these meetings where it's almost like they don't even want to have the conversation. They're just anti-data center. And, you know, obviously there's probably legitimate concerns that some people have. But, you know, I know this happened over in Oliver County here in North Dakota, is that there was a county commissioner that was for over, I think, 50 years involved in local government. But because of some of the animosity that the public had, he resigned and said, like, hey, listen, I'm good with criticism. He said, you know, in public service, you're going to get criticism. And any leader knows that when you're leading in any office, and whether it's government or private institution, I mean, in a church setting, obviously, like I'm involved in, is leadership will bring criticism, and that's just part of the job. But he says this is now, it feels like we're at a point where it's beyond criticism, and it's become, as he says, filled with malice. And, you know, that's the thing about the national debate around data centers, is there seems to be ditches on both sides of this argument, and there has to be a middle ground. And to me, that's over the years, what I've always questioned is, like, what's the middle ground here? Because I know that there's propaganda maybe on both sides of this. And, you know, one wise elder in my life one time told me, he said, Andrew, it seems like my calling in life has been to pull people out of both sides of the ditch. And there is a ditch on either side of the road. And we just have to make sure we're asking the right questions and filled with discernment on some of these things. And so maybe next time I'm on, we'll talk more about these AI data centers, because it's going to be, even in the legislature, they formed a committee to study this in the interim, because they're going to need to have some good feedback and resources coming up next session around data centers. But thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Here we have What's on Your Mind with Scott Hennin coming up right after this. Again, thank you to Steve for letting me fill in. This has been Andrew Sletten sitting in for Steve. Hope you have a great rest of your Monday morning and afternoon. God bless.